Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli, and I'm here with change facilitator Frank Vandenhorst and mindfulness coach Peter M. Fellows. And in this week's episode, Book Talk, we'll each share one of our favorite books with you. Peter, can you tell us something about what you'll be sharing with us today?
Yeah, thank you, Rick. It's good to be back with you two gladiators of goodness and our loyal fan base, whoever you are, huddled around your radiogram with your family in the flickering light of the fireplace, sipping hot chocolate and hanging on each and every one of our inspirational words. So we began this podcast in order to empower you, the helpers, who no matter what your main occupation, feel the urge to help other people level up their lives, if only a little bit. And we're always asking ourselves, what else can we do to help you help others and earn some income as you do it? So we created The Source, your online, members-only peer coaching community, where you can always find people to support you on your journey, no matter what you want to do, no matter what happens to you. And there you can choose from Kaizen by Frank, or Rick's The Power of Connection, or my own Pathfinder's Question. And we use these paths in our own life. And it was following the guidance of my non-conscious mind, or Pathfinder, that I came across a series of articles, not a book, but a series of articles by Nancy Olson. Olson did some research showing the unexpected and extraordinary potential of a very mundane, commonplace activity that will level up your life. And I can't wait to share it with you. Back in a moment.
Ooh, Rick. Hanging on every word. Thank you, Peter. Great stuff. Frank, what do you got for us today?
Well, I'm going to talk about feedback. You know, feedback isn't enough to help you or your employees to grow. That's a statement made by Howie Jacobson and Peter Bergman. All forms of communication, they say, argued about it in the recent HBR, Harvard Business Review article. Feedback is perhaps the hardest to give and receive. Feedback isn't enough to help you or your employees to grow. Well, they're going to explain why, and I'm going to help you to go through this interesting subject, because the feedback giver must criticize, is the idea, which might hurt someone's feelings. So they avoid having the conversation in the first place. There is no overwhelming evidence in science that focusing on shortcomings and weaknesses doesn't help the recipient of the feedback getting any better. So if feedback doesn't help people develop themselves, then what does? The authors offer four steps to shift from a culture of feedback to a culture of coaching that I will discuss in this episode, adding some of my observations of what I experienced with some students. So if you want to know more, stay tuned. Rick, what about you?
Great stuff, Frank. So Meditations of John Muir, Nature's Temple, took me to places where I lost consciousness of my own existence. I became one with the landscape, and the words have become a nightly song before I retire. Peter, what do you have for us today?
All right. I can hear you singing sometimes at night when I'm lying there in bed, closed eyes. It's scary. Anyway, so I grew up in a suburban village in the west end of Ottawa, Canada, and I used to get in trouble in high school because I would write out my assignments in pencil. My political science teacher particularly hated this, and he told me I had to rewrite all my notes in pen. I didn't. And the reason that I wrote in pencil was not from some protest against the establishment, this was the 70s, which was seeking to manufacture replaceable units for corporate America. No, it was just that I found, for some reason I didn't understand, that when I wrote in pencil, I could think better than when I used a pen. Later, as I grew up and when I was living in Toronto and writing a book on lucid dreaming, I only used a typewriter, state-of-the-art IBM Selectric, for those of you who know, once all the creative writing was done by pencil. And I needed a finished copy to send to the publisher because I loved handwriting and I loved handwriting with pencil. But today, I prefer a keyboard. I can start writing about something on my MacBook Air, then add to it while I'm out grocery shopping by just using my iPhone. And if I awaken in the middle of the night with an idea, I have an iPad at the side of my bed to jot that down. This digital media allows me to find quotes online and then just copy and paste, and it makes editing a breeze. I still have my handwritten old journals, over 20 of them, but I use my computer for journaling now because it allows me quicker access to recorded notes whenever I need them, and adding in newly remembered things can be accomplished seamlessly. Nevertheless, I was surprised to read about the research Nancy Olson had done and found about the power of handwriting and how it can offer you another path to flow and fulfillment in your life. She began with the importance of handwriting in school. According to Berninger 2006, brain scans in students revealed that when they wrote by hand, they expressed more ideas and that there was greater neural activation in areas associated with working memory. And according to Mueller and Oppenheimer, 2014, students who took note in longhand performed better on conceptual questions than students who took notes on laptops. While using a keyboard made it easier to take more notes, and that's helpful, laptop note takers had a tendency to transcribe lectures verbatim, rather than to process information and reframe it in their own words. So that was detrimental to learning. According to Stanislaw Dehaene, a psychologist at the University College of France in Paris, when we write, a unique neural circuit is automatically activated, and it seems that this circuit is contributing in unique ways we didn't realize. Learning is made easier. According to ScienceDaily.com, Associate Professor Anne Mangan at the University of Stavanger's Reading Center believes something is lost in changing from pen to keyboard. Mangan said, "Our bodies are designed to interact with the world that surrounds us. The process of reading and writing involves a number of our senses. And when writing by hand, our brain receives feedback from our actions, along with the sensation of touching a pencil and paper, which is completely different from the feedback from typing on a keyboard." So reading this research was part of what stimulated our partner, Frank, to include lined pages for handwritten notes in his soon-to-be-published guide on Kaizen. Now, perhaps you're sitting there saying, "Well, that's all good, Peter, but I'm not in school. So how does this help me level up my life in the real world now?" Well, Olson went on to talk about using writing as a powerful meditation practice. According to Jane Burnett in the Huffington Post, writing can help us to integrate our active mind with the meditative mind. It sharpens our ability to attend to the present moment and engenders calmness and creativity. And that's not simply an opinion, because according to an Indiana University study, the mere action of writing by hand unleashes creativity not easily accessed in other ways. And when they used high-tech magnetic resonance imaging, they shown that low-tech handwriting affects the brain in the same way that meditation does. The sequential hand movements of handwriting activate large portions of the brain responsible for thinking, language, healing, and working memory. And according to the neuroscientist Dr. Claudia Aguirre, mindful writing forces us to slow down, rest the brain, and sparks creativity. Many of history's greatest minds spent hours writing things that were never meant to be seen by anyone. Scientists like Isaac Newton, Charles Darwin, politicians like Benjamin Franklin, Winston Churchill, artists like Leonardo da Vinci, Ernest Hemingway, and historical figures like Marcus Aurelius and Abraham Lincoln all spent considerable time handwriting to nobody but themselves. They understood that the deliberate practice of writing had significant benefits to their creativity, self-awareness, memory, productivity, and well-being. So what can you do to take advantage of this research? Well, if you're a member of the source and you choose, for example, Kaizen as your path for engaging a product, you could choose to download Frank's guide as a PDF, free for members, or purchase, at cost only, the softcover book version from Amazon when it's published. And you could work through the process in longhand on the lined pages. And Rick and I are going to do the same, offer guides on our paths. And if you do journaling, or would like to. You could choose to amplify its benefits by journaling in longhand. And if you like mindfulness, you could choose to use the movement meditation of writing meditation. And you could choose to set an intention for writing session, like looking for insights into something or inspiration. In fact, one researcher says writing sessions of as little as 15 to 20 minutes on five or less occasions can help people deal with traumatic, stressful, and emotional events. And Olson suggests if you choose, you could find yourself a nice pen that feels really good to you, and you just write as you want, because you want to. Don't worry about penman, grammar, punctuation. Just start writing, because it's the benefit that of handwriting itself that helps you. Everything else is a bonus. Each of us is different, so choose what works for you. Rick?
Wow. Great stuff, Peter. Thank you. Frank, what do you got today?
Over the past 30 years, companies have been focused on creating cultures of feedback. But why are you doing that? And why are they doing that? The objective of feedback is to help people improve performance, Howie and Jacobson and Peter Bergman say in their article in Harvard Business Review. We want people to up their game, to live up their potential, to contribute powerfully to their teams, to interact effectively with colleagues. Wow, sounds great, doesn't it? Yes. And at home and at school, what do we want of our kids? And how do students develop themselves in a safe and fulfilling way? Questions are related to feedback. We want our organizations to become places where people can skillfully and candidly communicate with one another in service of their growth and improved performance, the authors say. And what do we do at home with our family and friends, I wonder? Do we give them feedback? Well, if I hear some married couples talk to each other, I think that sounds feedback, but are they always happy with each other? The grumpy old people, they say. How do we do that? And what is the impact on their thoughts, feelings, and behavior? All the goals Jacobson and Bergman mentioned are worthy goals. But there's one thing. Telling people they are missing the mark is not the same as helping them to hit the mark. And that's often the common practice of giving feedback. In fact, it often has the opposite effect. Negative feedback reduces engagement in conversations and suppresses exploration of future goals and desires. And calling it constructive feedback doesn't fool anyone, they say. Students often stop exploring and start play along, mostly out of fear, is my experience as college lecturer and tutor. The authors underline my observation when they say that people will do just about anything to avoid feeling of shame, including denying the problem. No problem, no shame. Or blaming it on someone else. No fault, not my fault, no shame. Do you recognize this? Well, maybe, maybe not. Even when someone appears to respond positively and maturely to feedback, they often inwardly are in a fight or flight modus. So, is this what we want to happen? I don't think so. If feedback is the way forward, if isn't it the way forward, what is? In their book, You Can Change Other People, Jacobson and Bergman share four steps, and I'm going to quote them here and share them with you. Step number one, shift from critic to ally. No one wants to talk to a critic. Everyone wants to talk to an ally, the authors say. When you're someone's ally, you display caring for them, confidence in them, and commitment to them. In your presence, they drop shame and defensiveness and instead focus on becoming better. So how can you clearly communicate that you're an ally and not a critic? Well, here's a three steps formula. One, empathize. If they're struggling, acknowledge how hard or frustrating or annoying or painful that must be. Number two, express confidence. Let them know your belief in their ability to handle the challenge they are facing. And number three, ask permission. Ask them if they could be willing to think with you about the situation. This approach resembles with what Marshall B. Rosenberg says in his outstanding book, Nonviolent Communication. And he says, nonviolent communication is language of life. And I talked extensively about this book in episode 25. Initially, of initiating an ally conversation can be as simple as, that sounds really frustrating. And how can you handle it better? Or what would you like to think it through together? Is that an idea? Just you and me sitting down and talk about it, about your feelings and what your thoughts are. You know, just easing the things a little bit for that person. Step number two, identifying an energizing outcome. Once they have said yes, it's tempting to go back to the problem, the frustrating past. Let's talk about that disruptive team member or fellow student. But don't get there. Not yet. Instead, focus on the energizing future they want to create, the authors say. One that is bigger than their problem. Ask them, what is the outcome you are going for? Allow them to articulate what they're trying to achieve for themselves and the organization. For example, I would love to create a high-performance team, one in which we communicate, collaborate, and even have conflicts in a productive way. Help them to get to an outcome that is positive, clear, and meaningful. So, how could you apply this approach to one of your kids, for example? Could you focus on an outcome that is positive, clear, and meaningful? Well, think about how you can do that. Step number three, discover a hidden opportunity. When you're both clear about the outcome, what you want, then you can revisit the problem, Jacobson and Bergman tell us. But this time, instead of trying to solve it, you're asking, how can this problem help you achieving the energizing outcome? How might it be a good thing? A chance to practice a new behavior in service of an important value or goal? In other words, with a little coaching on style, the person can really be the key to the dream team and help that team to perform much better. For a student to work with more joy and effectiveness on a team assignment, as an example. Step number four, create a 10-level plan. In this step, you guide them to brainstorm ways of capitalizing on what opportunity and on that opportunity they have and choose and commit them to a plan of action to achieve it. The authors say. The term level 10 plan means that that when we ask on a scale from 1 to 10, how confident are you that you will execute this plan? The answer is resounding 10. Our struggling leaders' level 10 plan could be scheduling a conversation with the disruptive team member as an ally in order to help them to contribute to the in a positive way to the team. What's important isn't the plan succeed as such, but that they follow through on taking a new action, assessing results, and continually moving forward. It's a different mindset. I'm doing this with my college students, and I see it works quite well. They are much more effective and joyful. To wrap it up, feedback skillfully delivered can be a tool to help people identify their blind spots and opportunities for growth. You can use the Yohari window, as I discussed in episode 71, that was all about acceptance versus resistance, to help you to find your blind spots. Feedback will only work when it's embedded in a true process of growth and development. Rick, what about you?
Wow. Great stuff, Frank. Very comprehensive. Thank you. So here's what I want to share with you today. During a chat with two friends earlier this year, we each discussed some of our current readings. My friend Rob mentioned he was reading John Muir, a well-known naturalist, born in 1838, passed in 1914, a Scotsman. He was a writer and activist for our national park system. So I decided to investigate, and I started with the Meditations of John Muir, Nature's Temple. This incredible prose immediately transformed me as though I was right there on the hikes with John. His eloquent poetic words literally stir the soul, each page filled with epic descriptions of our national beauty right here in America. This particular volume is food for the spirit, providing lush paradises and jagged mountain peaks, all delivered in small, easily consumable portions, much like our Road Ahead Cafe menu. A wonderful getaway that continues to remind me how all I need is already inside me, ready to support my highest good and the good of all those around me. Peter, final thoughts?
Very nice, very nice. Well, the best way to help someone else level up their life is by sharing your story on how you did it. Let them pick their project, whatever it is in their life that they wish to level up. Let them choose their path. Frank's Kaizen, Rick's The Power of Connection, or my Pathfinder question. Let them share their story, for that is the best way to truly learn your path, sharing it. And visit us at thesource123.com. Rick?
Thank you, Peter. Great stuff. Frank, your final thoughts?
Yes. Feedback isn't enough to help you or your employees to grow. That's quite clear right now, I hope, because learning rests on our grasp of what we're doing well and not on what we're doing poorly, and certainly not on someone else's sense, idea of what we're doing poorly. So people help people to get to an outcome that is positive, clear, and meaningful. And if you love what you're hearing here, check out what we are building for you at The Source, our online peer coaching community at thesource123.com, as my dear friend Peter just explained. Looking forward to meet you there. And as always, what you think about and think about, you bring about. And have a wonderful day. Rick.
Great stuff, Frank. Thank you. So my final thoughts: when we seek out the infinite power and simplicity of nature, no matter the form, we see our true place among all of creation, a part of the whole, traveling this wondrous journey called life in all its beauty and splendor. We are never alone, rather living among the stars. Thank you for joining us today for the Road Ahead Cafe. Remember, if you like us, subscribe. And if you love us, make a quick selfie video right now to tell us one golden nugget you got today, and go check out The Source at thesource123.com. We look forward to getting together with you again next week. Until then, savor your day today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.